The STS is the name we give for shuttle flights, and so that was the crew of our most recent shuttle flight, STS-126.
Okay.
They were the men and women walking in their blue flight suits in front of the rover, which was a great treat. We also had Buzz Aldrin marching with us, so we had kind of a past, present, and future of NASA. Buzz obviously representing our Apollo program, the STS-126 crew, representing the shuttle and the station mission that they had led. And then our Lunar Electric rover was the third part of that, is a representation of our future missions.
So this Lunar Electric rover, this is the thing that was in the parade.
That's right.
Like half a bus.
That's right.
Describe what this thing will do, and it looks like people will live in it.
Yeah, it's really more than what we ever dreamed of in Apollo. The Apollo astronauts had these little dune buggy class rovers. Very small, four-wheel. They could carry two guys in their suits, and that's about it. Maybe a lunchbox or some tools and rocks. When we started looking at what we would do if we were going to be on the lunar surface longer than just 3 days, we realized that we really needed a more capable machine. And as we started evolving the design, we realized that the machine itself might be part of the habitation solution. So we designed some cabins that could house a couple astronauts for as much as 14 days. And multiple of these could be on the lunar surface, driving around, exploring a number of different sites as far as hundreds of kilometers away from each other, and then make it back to the lander that's got the ascent module and return to Earth. Eventually, we're thinking we'll bring down some habitation modules also that'll be some larger volumes that the rovers can dock with. They've got a side hatch that allows them to plug in either to other rovers or to a hab module. And so in a sense, what we're looking at for the moon, and I think this connects well with our energy plans, what we're looking at are building solar-powered homes and plug-in electric vehicles that can plug into those homes, recharge, and conduct missions on the moon.
And so this rover that we saw in the parade is the prototype of the rover that might actually make it to the moon. And if that's true, how does it actually get delivered? How do you actually take delivery of the rover on the moon?
So this is our latest prototype. It is designed to operate in 1G, so it's got one gravity, one Earth's gravity. The moon is 1/6 Earth's gravity, so the lunar version will be able to be a little lighter. The way it is delivered is on a lander that is much larger than the Apollo lander. The new lander that we're working on can bring down about 15 tons of payload. And that's enough to carry a couple of these rovers with their cabins, a machine that we call Athlete that can step off of the lander and lower itself down to the surface, and then some solar power systems that can use the sun's energy to recharge all of the above.
Boy, I hope you test all that gear before it unwinds itself on the moon.
Yes, sir. We are definitely doing that. In fact, we've been doing some field tests out in the western U.S. in some deserts, and we plan on doing that pretty much once a year until we're ready to go to the moon.
We're talking this morning, to Rob Ambrose, Deputy Division Chief of the Automation, Robotics, and Simulation Division at the Engineering Department at Johnson Space Center.
Now, looking at the picture of this device in the parade, it looks like it's about as tall, maybe a head or two taller than the man standing on the back platform, and not much longer. And so how many people would be confined, could live in that thing for 2 weeks?
Well,
you said two?
Yes, last fall, we conducted a three-day mission where we had two astronauts living in it for 3 days. Actually, we had one astronaut and one geologist that came from the Smithsonian Institute. So we had an astronaut as a pilot and a geologist as a scientist working together as a team. They spent 3 days, two nights. We also had a number of one-day missions over the course of a couple weeks out in the desert. We did that test in northern Arizona at a place called Black Point, which was a very rough, kind of rocky lava flow, and the team was given a challenge to go conduct a number of inspections of the lava flow to help scientists answer questions about how the lava had gotten there and the age of the lava and basically the history of that valley. So it was a realistic kind of a challenge that the team was working on. Next summer, we're going to do a two-week, 14 days in the rover experiment.
Hmm.
So we're really going to push what we think is the limit of how long a couple people would be comfortable operating in a rover like that. The inside is really well outfitted for getting your job done. It's got sleeper bunks, kind of like on a sleeper train. It has a toilet in it. The captain's chairs up front fold down flush with the benches to make it a really nice, habitable environment.
So people won't be killing each other while they're in there for 2 weeks.
That's right. And they actually were very happy sleeping in it. When we went out to D.C. for the parade, most of the engineers were in a big army tent that we had rented. Mike Gernhardt, our astronaut pilot, chose to sleep in the cabin rather than sleep in the tent. Because he said it was just more comfortable, and I think he's right.
Well, that's good news. Now, as a result of the 3-day test, have you made any modifications?
We have. In fact, we're working on the stern, the rear end of the bus. This year, we're working on some enclosures that would protect the suits that are back there while we're driving, keep the UV off of them, and to keep them from getting covered in dust. We're working on a number of attachments that go on the rear of the vehicle, a fuel cell module and a new bulldozer blade, and a couple of other implements that we think would be effective out in the field.
And inside that bus, are they able to breathe the air in the room? Or do they keep their suits on during that time?
No, that's a key point. Inside the cabin, you don't have to wear your spacesuit, which is, could be a couple hundred pounds. So it's much more comfortable. And what we found was in the cabin, the two occupants could discuss what they were doing, drive around, check out the rocks, figure out what they're about to do, talk about it, and then they get into their suits, and they're only outside for like half an hour. When we did the same experiment with an unpressurized rover, that's a rover where you have to wear a suit to drive it, we found that they weren't able to pay as much attention to what they were doing. The suit's kind of hard on you. It rubs you in all the wrong spots. It's a lot more work. They weren't able to spend as much time strategizing about what they were about to do. They just were immediately doing it. So we found that the time that they spent in the suit was not being well used. Being able to get back into the cabin of the rover allows the crew to relax and be more productive.
Mm-hmm. Well, not having a 200-pound suit on, I think,
that's
the way you can be in there for 2 weeks.
And do you have robotic arms on this thing? Is it able to dig in the soil and do sampling and that kind of thing?
Not yet, but they're coming. We've got the logical points on the chassis where they would plug in, and we've already got them in design. So you're ahead of us.
Yeah, you could grab that moon lizard without having to put your suit on to go out and get it.
That would be quite a find, wouldn't it?